I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, welcome to Cubs PS Plus, a Northside Numbers game, a weekly podcast that dives headfirst into the analysis of hot topics driving Chicago Cubs baseball. I'm your host, Mike Waller, a lifelong Cub fan, full-time baseball stat nerd, and sometime youth baseball coach. Cubs PS Plus is part of the Bleacher Bunch Productions on the Fans First Sports Network, joining great shows like The Sun Ranto Show, Cup of Cubby Blue, and Baseball Rabbit Hole. The Bleacher Bunch feed is available wherever you get your podcasts, and Cubs PS Plus is always available, ad-free, to Patreon supporters at patreon.com/CubsPSPlus, where you can support the show for as little as a dollar a month. In addition to the podcast feeds, you can also find me on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at CubsPSPlus, a spin on the baseball metric OPSPlus. Love the pod or hate it, please drop a review wherever it is you find your podcasts. If you've done that, thank you so much. Maybe you could share an episode with a friend. Welcome to episode 73, the Adbert Alzolay episode of this podcast. I don't like to go current players here, but Adbert is the only player to ever wear number 73 for the Cubs. I'm looking forward to seeing that fist pump on the bump this year. The 2024 season is about to kick off. What are you expecting from the Cubs? In this season preview episode, I look at five big stories that will tell me a lot about what the Cubs are going to do this year. The last story is how many games the Cubs will win. I get into my explanations. Can the Cubs win the division? Will they make the playoffs? Let's find out. Are you ready? I'm ready. Here we go. Baseball is almost here, finally. Thursday's opening day. Today I'm recording this on Tuesday morning. It's been a wild week for me. I think I made mention that I tore my bicep moving a couch, of all things. How stupid is that? But last Wednesday I had surgery, so I'm kind of laid up right now. It's good in front of the camera, my arm in a sling. I'm immobilized until Thursday, and then hopefully I can get a brace and get some mobility back and start getting on with my life. But I've learned this week why I'm not a switch hitter. I can never switch hit. I am very right-hand dominant, and this week has been a whole lot of torture. But the pain's gone. My mind is fresh as it ever is. You guys who listen know that. But this week I wanted to walk through some things as we head into opening day. I'm going to lay out sort of the top five things I'm watching for this season. And at the end, the last one will be my win forecast for the season. So let's go. The first thing I'm looking at this year, counting back from 5-1, number five, I'll say bullpen management. So last season, the Cubs got off to an okay start. They were 14-13 in April and then had almost disastrous 10-18 May, which set them way back. During that time, the Cubs did not have solid roles in the bullpen. They started the season with Michael Fulmer as closer. He struggled in that role to some extent. The other spots weren't really set, so they really didn't have any kind of coherent bullpen. They blew a lot of leads. They lost a lot of close games. And that would wind up being the theme of the year. Now, when the Cubs did right the ship in June, July, August, and played a lot of really good baseball, the bullpen was in order. But that also meant that they were way overly reliant on, like, four guys. You know, it was Edward Alzolay's closer, Julian Merriweather, Mark Leiter Jr., and Michael Fulmer. And as the season wore on, those guys got more and more tired. And really what finally did them in was injuries to Fulmer and Alzolay. You know, they lost those two. By that point, Jose Kwas was in the loop, but Kwas had also pitched a ton with Kansas City before the Cubs traded for him. So all those guys really stacked up the appearances. The bullpen ran out of gas late. And the Cubs played an entire season last year in the margins. We talked about that so many times. A lot of close games, a lot of close losses, a lot of close wins. But the depth just wasn't there. Now, fast forward to 2024. The Cubs make the big move to let David Ross go and bring in Craig Counsell. Counsell has a great track record of managing bullpens in Milwaukee. Now, he's had a lot of arm talent in Milwaukee as well, but he's also managed a lot of really good bullpens. A lot of guys have come and gone and had success in Milwaukee. And so I'm optimistic this year. And when you look at the roster, so the Cubs settled on the roster pretty much yesterday. We'll see if there are any changes with guys starting the season on the injured list. But the starting rotation is going to be Justin Steele. Game two is going to be Kyle Hendricks. Game three is going to be Jordan Wicks. Shota Imanaga is going to get the game four start, the home opener at Wrigley. And then Javier Assad's going to take that fifth spot until Jameson Taillon is back. Then the bullpen, you've got, doing this off the cuff, but they got Edward Alzolay is going to be the closer, Julian Merriweather, Hector Neris, Drew Smyly, Mark Leiter Jr., Luke Little made the bullpen, which is great. Jose Quas, Yency Almonte is going to make up the pen. And then on the position side, they've got Yan Gomes and Miguel Amaya are going to split the catching duties. I've said many times, the season may start off as kind of a split. I expect that by, or maybe not expect, but I really hope that by the end of the season, Miguel Amaya is emerging as the number one. Then they'll have Michael Busch at first base, Nico Horner at second, Dansby Swanson at third, Christopher Morel is going to play a lot at third base. The outfield is going to be Ian Happ, Cody Bellinger, Seiya Suzuki. Fourth outfielder, Mike Tauchman. And then the depth on the bench is going to be Garrett Cooper, who made the roster as a non-roster invitee. He'll do some first base DH. Then they'll have, like I said, already said, Mike Tauchman is the fourth outfielder. Nick Madrigal and Miles Mastroboni to make up the rest of the bench. And we'll get to that in a minute. But so I want to talk about bullpen management. So right now the Cubs have what really looks like a way, way deeper set of arms in the bullpen than they had last year. We already know off the top, Edward Alzolay established himself as a closer last year. Julian Merriweather has great stuff. Looked good this spring. He was rock solid last year. I mean, he can hit triple digits. He's got nasty stuff. Bullpens are hit and miss, and relievers are as wild as they come sometimes in terms of the swing from up to down, but I really don't see any reason to expect a Julian Merriweather drop-off. As long as he stays healthy, his stuff should play. Hector Neris has had a rough spring. I've seen a lot of commentary from Cub fans kind of worried about him. Spring training is tough. You know, you come in, you're working on certain things, you're getting ready. Any given outing, you never know what a guy is specifically working on. You know, we've seen times where a starter gets absolutely lit up, and then after the game, the guy talks about, yeah, I was working on throwing, really just working on throwing one pitch today, or I made this outing all about the pitches I don't have total confidence in. So, of course, you know, they're not going to be at their best. Spring training is also a really small sample size. You know, you're out there, you're throwing an inning, what, 6-7 times? You have a couple bad outings, the numbers are not going to look great, and the edge is just not there. So you look at how many times you bring a closer into a non-save situation, they're not at their best, because their usual mechanism of getting ready is having that pressure, that added adrenaline, just getting amped up because of the situation, and that's just not there in spring training. So, you know, who knows? Hector Neris might have a bad season this year, but I don't see any. I'm not worried at this point. He has a long track record of being a very good reliever. He's been very consistent over time, and he's a guy I'm really looking forward to seeing out of that bullpen. You know, Drew Smyly, there was some talk about him maybe getting the fifth starter spot over Assad. I like Smyly where he is. You know, throughout his career, he's been a really good swingman, going back and forth between starting in the bullpen. Last year, he got off to a great start as a starter, and he's fully capable of being a starting pitcher. He will start games for the Cubs this year. There's almost no way around it. But Drew Smyly is a guy, at this point in his career, he hasn't thrown, you know, 150-plus innings, I think, since 2016. He's had a bunch of arm injuries. He's had a bunch of years where he's been in and out of the bullpen. We saw last year he was really rock solid as a starter up until the point where he hit about 100 innings, and then he faded back. Then the Cubs put him in a bullpen role, and that kind of freshened him up. He was quite good in the bullpen most of the rest of the way. So he's a guy that, you know, can be a lefty out of the pen. He can go, you know, if a starter gets lit up early or has to leave because of injury, he can certainly step in and go 3 to 5 innings. He's also a guy who can come in and, you know, work that off speed, work that curveball, and get guys out. He's tough on lefties. He's not that tough on lefties, I guess. His splits are not that dramatic, but he's effective. He's been effective in the pen. He was a huge bullpen arm for the Braves in their title run in 21, and he's just a good veteran guy to have in that bullpen. You look at Mark Leiter Jr., everything about him comes down to that split finger. He and Neris both are right-handed, but they both play really strong to lefties because of that split finger fastball. Neris also throws a really good one. But we saw last year when Leiter has that split working, he's a lefty killer. And that's really nice to have in that bullpen. We also saw at the end of the season, you know, whether it was injury or fatigue or what, he lost that split. And if he loses that split, you know, he's that pitcher that has trouble sticking in a role. So we'll see where the season goes. If, you know, he's got that split working, and then if Craig Counsell can keep him kind of rested, keep him sharp, use him in spots, excuse me, he's a very good arm to have in that pen. Let's go to Luke Little. You know, Luke Little came up at the end of last season. We saw him in September. He threw, I think it was six or seven scoreless innings total. Did not get a lot of run. David Ross did not trust him in a lot of pressure situations. He's a guy that maybe, you know, you never know what's going to happen with a kid who comes up making his debut, pitching in pressure games for the first time. But we've seen a lot of times over recent years where teams like the Astros, Dodgers, those teams with good pitching development systems, all of a sudden have all these arms coming up towards the end of the season that can just go out, throw gas, get guys out, get swing and miss. And I kind of wonder last year if the Cubs had used Little more down the stretch in September, maybe if things could have worked out a little bit differently, given how close they were. You know, they missed the playoffs by a game, effectively two because of tiebreaks. They use him in a couple more games, maybe hold a couple more leads. Who knows? But he looked good this spring. He throws so hard, and he's got a really deceptive motion too. So he's big, huge, you know, 6'8" lefty who comes in from a kind of a funky angle, and the ball gets on you fast, and his motion is so slow and so smooth, and then the ball just explodes out of his hand. So it's going to be fun to watch. I think he's going to be brutal on lefties, and I think he's got enough stuff to get righties out too. But I mean, he's going to be tough this year, and I think he could really grow over the course of this season into 2025 and become really a big leverage arm for this bullpen. So I'm really excited about that. You look a little bit deeper, you've got Yency Almonte, who really struggled with the Dodgers last year, but in 2022, he was absolutely lights out. And some of these relievers, you know, they're up and they're down, and we'll see what the Cubs can find, but he's a guy I'm optimistic with. Now, Almonte's a guy who doesn't have options. So if he does struggle, if this is a bad Yency Almonte year, then the Cubs may have to make a move at some point. Out of the rest of those guys, Mark Leiter does not have any options left. Neris does not have options. Alzolay does, but if you get to the point where you're using his last option, no, actually Alzolay is out of options. Luke Little has options. Jose Kwas has options. Now Kwas is another guy. They traded Nelson Velasquez for him last year. I thought he looked pretty good down the stretch. I mean, he had his ups and his downs like everybody, but I really like his funk, his kind of sidearm delivery. He gives me a total Pedro Strop vibe off the mound. He's hats to the right instead of hats to the left, but hey, to each their own. I'm really optimistic about him this year. You know, he learned a new slider within like a week of being in Chicago, and they've had more time to work that pitch now. I think he's going to get a lot of swing and miss. I think he's could emerge as a big guy in the pen. But, you know, as noted, if he struggles, he's got options. He could go back to AAA. So what's Counsell going to do with that bullpen? I think they're going to start off. I think it's going to be a lot of mix and match. I mean, even Craig Counsell has said that finding a bullpen over the course of the first several weeks of the season is very much a feel game. You know, you try guys in certain spots. Some will work, some won't. And you sort of let it go, and eventually you'll find your rhythm. I think early on, you know, the Cubs start Justin Steele day one. They've got day two off. So I don't know how deep they're going to look for Justin Steele to go. Obviously, a lot of that will come down to how Justin Steele pitches. But I would expect that maybe we'll see five innings out of Steele. You know, the Cubs, one thing the Cubs are going to want to watch with some of the young players coming up, you know, Justin Steele last year threw 170 innings, I think, career high for him. And he was tired. He kind of faded down the stretch. That's understandable. You know, it's a career high workload. But now that he's done it, Justin Steele knows he can get there. So if he stays healthy, I mean, he's definitely has every reason to expect to be 150, 170, 180 innings plus guy who could go into October. And I think Counsell will watch that and grab spots to rest him. You know, if he may be nails one day and just have his best stuff, and maybe it's a day you could push him 7-8 innings. But if the Cubs have a lead and they trust that bullpen, you know, maybe get him out after six. Save a couple innings, just save some bullets for the end of the season. And I think that's one thing I'll really be looking for counsel. Like, how does he work that bullpen? How does he decide when to pull the starter? I think he's going to have a lot of mix and match opportunities. There are some young arms in AAA that look really good. I mean, Cam Sanders continues to show electric stuff if he can get a little bit of command. Daniel Palencia looked really good at times this spring. There are just a lot of options, and you know, I'm really excited for what Craig Counsell is going to do. So let's move on to, you know, number four, bench roles. Laid out the bench. You know, the bench to start the season is going to be whichever catcher isn't starting. Mike Tauchman, Garrett Cooper, Nick Madrigal, Miles Mastrobo, and I'm blanking on one. Let me look that up. I left somebody off the bench list. Apologies for this tremendous radio. No, I didn't. So the bench is going to be the backup catcher. It's going to be Mike Tauchman. It's going to be Garrett Cooper, Nick Madrigal, and Miles Mastrobone. And somebody's going to be playing DH every day. Patrick Wisdom's going to start the season on the injured list. We'll see about Madrigal. He's been banged up in spring training. It's really hard to trust his legs at this point, but you know, he played in the field the other day. It looks like he's going to be on the opening day roster. And he's, I think, kind of the insurance for Christopher Morel at third base. Morel has had ups and downs at third this year. I mean, he's in spring training, he's shown that he can, he's hugely athletic, has a big arm. He can make some really good plays. And then there are just other plays where he just, his throwing angle is not ideal and he's a bit of a mess. But I've said with him before, you know, it's going to come down to, can he out hit his defensive mistakes? I don't think anybody's expecting him to be a gold glover over there. But giving his bat a position and letting them flex the DH, so if, you know, Ian Happ's tired, he can DH for a day. If the Cubs later in the season decide to bring Pico Armstrong up to play center field, maybe he'll let Seiya Suzuki get off his feet in DH and Bellinger plays right field. It just gives them so much more flexibility if they can play Morel at third base 3 to 5 times a week. Now on the bench, you know, I want to see how Counsell handles this, how he develops those roles. Mike Tauchman's role, I think, is pretty clear, fourth outfielder. I think Garrett Cooper is pretty clear. He's going to be probably at least a platoon DH. He might get some time at first base. Michael Bush is going to get a lot of run, but you know, there may be some, I think Counsell's going to be good about giving some of these guys, including Bush, matchups that play to their strength, play to their favor. You might as well put a kid in position to succeed, build that confidence, and then gradually expand, you know, him to maybe an everyday, literally every at-bat player. I remember early in Anthony Rizzo's career, there were times the Cubs sat him against tough lefties, you know, left him in to mash against the righties and then gradually brought him on against the lefties. And then, you know, within a fairly short time, within a season or two, he was literally the everyday player playing 155 plus games at first base, and he could hit everybody. I think it's all about getting that. And I think Craig has shown in Milwaukee, he's very good at this. Get that positive mindset going, get the confidence going, get a guy believing in himself. And I think that's how the Cubs are going to use Garrett Cooper. Now we will see what happens. Patrick Wisdom's going to start on the injured list. Sounds like he might be back mid-April. I'll continue to beat the drum. I don't like having both Patrick Wisdom and Nick Madrigal on the same bench. Don't entirely love Nick Madrigal and Miles Mastrobone on the same bench. And then there will also be some issues with Garrett Cooper and Patrick Wisdom on the same bench. I think...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'll start with Miles Mastrobone. You guys know I like Miles. I think his game is strong. I think if you're a good team, you have a guy like Miles Mastrobone on your bench. He's fast. He bats lefty. He's got a little bit of pop. He's not going to hit, you know, 20 homers, but he did hit 16 in 2022 in AAA with Tampa. And he's shown the ability to put out some gap power. He played really well once he got called up in August last year for the rest of the season. He's had a good spring. He plays solid D at six positions. He can play the outfield. He can play third base, shortstop, second. And he's just more versatile than Nick Madrigal. He's got speed. He's way faster than Nick. And Nick Madrigal, I think right now, is kind of their hedge at third base. It doesn't necessarily have to be. That could be Miles. But for now, he's going to stick. Garrett Cooper is going to be that DH for space bench, and then the other bench position will be the catcher position. As I said, I think they'll start kind of a 50-50 split. I don't know if they'll each take certain pitchers to start the season. But I think over time, I think the goal would be to build Miguel Amaya into the everyday catcher. And not to phase Yan Gomes out. I mean, he's a strong veteran presence, but a clear number one to Gomes' number two. Gomes' contract is up after the season. I don't know if he's going to want to play more. He might retire. I think he's 38 this year. Get Miguel into that starting role. Let him go. He showed some promise with the bat last year. He's a guy who was a top prospect in their system before injuries derailed him from pretty much 2019 through 2022. Obviously, he lost the 2020 season entirely, due to COVID. And it was cool to see him come up last year. You know, he seems like a smart guy. He learned a lot. He caught Kyle Hendricks in AAA when Kyle Hendricks was coming back from his injury. And I think he's learned a lot. He's been a sponge with Yan Gomes. He's got some pop at the plate. Now, I don't think he's going to be the offensive force that Wilson Contreras was, but I think he's going to be a better defensive catcher and game caller. So that's the goal. Now, what happens when Patrick Wisdom comes back? I don't know. Mike Tauchman did not have the best spring. I know he didn't have the spring he was hoping for. Excuse me. Last year when he came up, he probably should have started the year in Chicago last year. They broke camp with two outfielders with Saya down. That was a mess trying to cover right field with Patrick Wisdom and Trey Mancini and Miles Mastroboni. Mike Tauchman probably would have been a good addition there. But when he came up when Cody Bellinger got hurt. He stepped in, played really at an all-star level for 2 months. He was great. You know, we had the whole summer of Mike Tauchman thing, which I don't think he's been a huge fan of, but, you know, it was a thing. Like, he was a vibe. I remember the walk-off defensive catch with him going over the fence in center field to rob a home run in St. Louis to end that game. I mean, it was absolutely thrilling. He did fade a little bit down the stretch as he got less regular playing time, but that's the role of the fourth outfielder. You know, that's going to be his role this year. I'm confident he can fill it. He's shown enough in the past to show that he can go play good defense. And he's a guy who's patient at the plate, makes a lot of contact, and hits some balls hard. You know, I don't expect him to go hit 20 home runs. I don't expect him to do what he did in July and August last year across a full season. It's not who he's ever been in his career. And if he can do that, great. That's awesome. I would take that 100 times out of 100. But if he can just go be a solid fourth outfielder, that's great. If he struggles, if all of a sudden he's not playing good defense, if he's not making contact and patient at the plate, giving good at-bats off the bench, you know, then the Cubs might wind up having to look in another direction. They've got David Peralta, who showed a little something at the end of spring. Now, he's coming off elbow surgery last October, so he's still rehabbing. He's going to start in Iowa. I assume in his deal, in the minor league deal he signed with the Cubs, I assume he's got some sort of May 1st, June 1st-ish kind of opt-out. So if he's not added to the big club, he could walk, or he could still stay in AAA until the Cubs need him. And it's going to be really interesting to watch, because this spring the Cubs played a lot of kids, and that's going to feed into my number three point, you know, how Craig Counsell creates space for the kids. But, you know, right now the kind of the one big, maybe controversial, I won't go that far, but the one that I think raised a lot of eyebrows was Alexander Canario going down to AAA instead of, say, maybe Nick Madrigal. I think with Canario, I think it's more a factor of he had that gruesome injury the fall after the 2023 season, or after the 2022 season. And then his rehab, he had a long 6-8 month rehab. He really, I don't even think he played 2 full months in the minors last season. So he missed a lot of at-bats, a lot of regular play. And so, you know, Jed has said as much, but I think the obvious move was sending Canario down to go play every day in Iowa until there's a spot for him to come up in Iowa. Now, I think he could probably DH in Chicago, at least platoon DH, kind of right now. But I'm not against him getting those at-bats. And maybe if Mike Tauchman struggles, maybe Canario's a guy that comes up. You know, but how Counsell handles the bench, one complaint I made last year, you know, I was David Ross defender to some extent. I don't think he was a terrible manager. I think he was average at worst, and I think he was improving. You know, he started with the Cubs with no managerial experience, and you learn as you go. He's a smart baseball guy, but I do think he was a little too tied into the veterans and the, you know, the whole quote from the end of the season, you know, the guys who got us here. I don't think he did a very good job keeping that bench fresh throughout last season. You know, they started last season with Luis Torrens and Edwin Rios on the bench, and they never played. And then there were other times when, you know, Nelson Velasquez was up or other guys were up, and that, like, 25th, 26th guy on the bench didn't play very much. And that's fine. I mean, when you have Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, Cody Bellinger, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, you want those guys playing pretty much every day. But it's pretty much every day, not literally every day. You know, I've always believed that if there's a guy you're carrying on your 26-man roster, he's worth starting 1 to 2 games a week. And that's something that I think Joe Maddon always did a pretty good job with. The one thing I'll complain about Joe, or my only complaint about that with Joe, was he would tend to have like his entire bench start like getaway day. Yeah, I think you can mix those guys in a little bit different way that keeps the continuity, but also keeps guys fresh. I think you want, you know, Dansby Swanson, if he has his way, will play 162 games. He probably shouldn't, assuming he's healthy for the full season, probably shouldn't play more than 152, 154. Take 8 to 10 games off. You know, it's, you know, if you have a day off, take the day before or after the day off. You know, kind of just maximize those opportunities to get a couple days just to rest your legs, stay sharp. We saw at the end of last season, you know, he kind of faded down the stretch because I think he did miss time with his injuries, but once he came back, he was literally playing every day. And I think everybody can benefit by getting 1 to 2 days off. That's why the standard American work week isn't 7 days a week, it's 5. And moving to 4, you know, like you just it's a physical grind going through 162 game baseball season. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of time out in the heat. It's a lot of physical activity. And obviously these guys are in shape for it and they train for it, but it's also a mental grind, you know? And it's kind of easy when you're going good, when you're hot, you know, the baseball looks like a beach ball up there. You're making every play in the field. You're feeling great. You know, you get that momentum going, you hit a slump and it's tough. You know, trying to grind at bats. You're trying to break down film, trying to figure out what's wrong, trying to tweak your swing. Just keep guys fresh. It's okay to let Dansby take a day off, slide Nico over to second base, or let Mastroboni get a start at short. Like, he can play a competent shortstop. So I want to see what Craig does to keep those guys fresh. I think same with Seiya Suzuki. Yeah, I think he's going to do well if he can DH periodically or, you know, take a day off. Same with Ian Happ. Cody Bellinger should move around the field a little bit. You know, he'll play mostly center unless and until there comes a point in time where Pico Armstrong comes up. We'll see what Michael Bush does at first base. And in the beginning, Michael Bush may be a little bit more of a matchup play. So maybe, you know, I assume he's going to start basically against every right-hander and some lefties. Maybe on some of those tougher lefties, maybe Bellinger slides to first base and Mike Tauchman comes in and plays the outfield. Or they give, say, a day off, Bellinger slides over to right field where he actually won his gold glove and then, you know, get some days off. But it's going to be particularly important early in the season, mid-season, to make sure those guys are getting days off so that, you know, if you get to September and you're in an absolute pennant race and every game matters, you're still going to need to give guys days off here and there. But if you've built those days off and those guys aren't burning out by September, then you can push a little harder. Then you can just go ride, you know, Dansby every day. You get to the post, if the Cubs do get to the postseason this year, which, you know, spoiler alert, I think they will. Dansby Swanson's not sitting out in the playoffs. Just not going to happen. And that's fine. But that's why you rest throughout the season to make sure that they've got gas in the tank when it gets to crunch time. So let's talk about number 3. Space for the kids. We saw in spring training a lot of young players for the Cubs. Owen Casey had a tremendous spring training. He was just crushing baseballs left and right. Pico Armstrong struggled a little bit at the plate, but he showed flashes. I mean, he showed some gap power, showed off that glove in center field. He's super fast. He's aggressive on the bases. I love it. And he's just going to be an absolute vibe when he's ready for the bigs. Alexander Canario hit some big balls, you know. Kevin Alcantara, Matt Shaw all showed some things this during spring training. And those guys are coming. Now, the Cubs kind of rode the line this offseason. We talked about it a lot. You know, they didn't go get a lot. They made the trade for Michael Bush and Yency Almonte. They did sign Shota Imanaga. But they didn't load up in some places where they didn't go get a JD Martinez or a Rhys Hoskins. I think they want to see what they have with some of these kids and leave space. And that's where I think another place where I think Craig Counsell is going to maybe be a better fit for this team than David Ross was. David Ross is very much a veteran-based manager, which is fine to a point. And last year was a little bit different too, because some of those guys were kind of knocking on the door, but not all the way there. You know, I wish they'd have given Nelson Velasquez a little more run. You know, he or Mike Tauchman could have been the third outfielder starting when Saya was down. I think it's clear, you know, Nelson Velasquez was up and down in 2022, did not have a tremendous season, but also that season could have gotten more run too. So I'm not going to say like the Cubs didn't think he's a dude. Obviously he went to Kansas City and was mashing bombs. He's always had tremendous power. But I think Craig Counsell has shown through his time in Milwaukee that he's willing and able to mix the young guys in. You know, last year we saw him get a good amount of playing time for Sal Frelick. They've had other guys over the years that kind of came in and got bits and pieces. Maybe there's an injury and you bring up a young player for a couple weeks and let him go, knowing that when the starter's back, the young guy's going to get sent back down. The Cubs did a lot of that in 2015, 2016. You know, I remember Kyle Schwarber and Wilson Contreras would come up for a couple weeks at a time, do well, play a lot, and then, you know, when the full roster's back, it's a loaded team and back down they go. And then when it comes to the postseason, then you take whatever you think is your best playoff roster at that point. You know, Kyle Schwarber was up, Wilson Contreras was up, and it gives you those options. I'm hoping that Craig Counsell is going to do a good amount of that this year. I want to see, at some point this year, I do expect Pete Armstrong to get some run. I think we'll see Alexander Canario up this season for sure. I think it's only a matter of time until we see Matt Shaw. Now, Matt Shaw is going to be a little bit dictated in part by what he does, but also by what Michael Bush and Christopher Morel do. If Morel hits the way he's hit the last couple seasons and he can play an adequate third base, then there's no reason to rush Shaw up. You know, if Michael Bush hits the way the Cubs believe in him hitting, and then I think the Cubs really, really believe in Michael Bush. I think this is not just trading for a top guy. I think they really believe that he could be somebody special. And we'll see what happens. It's not going to happen overnight. He's not going to all of a sudden post a 160 WRC plus this season. But I think the Cubs really believe he can be a 130, 140 WRC plus guy in his career. He's got a lot of pop, lefty bat, really good hit tool. And that's what kind of sets him apart from Matt Mervis. They both have big power. Matt Mervis has shown big power. I think Michael Bush has a better hit tool. He's going to make more contact. He's going to work the zone a little bit better. He's going to I think be more consistent as a hitter. Doesn't mean, I think Matt Mervis is going to get some shots this year too. You know, if there's an injury, Garrett Cooper struggles, you know, Matt Mervis might be one of the next guys up. But it's going to be really interesting to see how Craig Counsell, he's going to prioritize winning. That's what he was brought in to do. They didn't bring him in for, you know, years 3, 4, 5 on a rebuild. You bring him in just like the Cubs brought in Joe Maddon because, Jed Hoyer thinks now is the time. So I want to see how Craig is able to balance that lineup, leave space for the kids to play and grow. And it may mean some up and down, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't mean that the day PCA comes up that he is locked into center field for the next 10 years. Now, if he plays that way, he may just go grab the job, and that's awesome. But it's also okay for him to come up, maybe do really well, and also get sent back down because, I don't know, maybe one of the Cubs outfit, maybe Ian Happ struggles with his hamstring this spring a little bit. If he has to go spend some time on the IL, you know, and maybe PCA comes up or maybe Canario comes up and, you know, Mike Tauchman plays left or Canario plays left. And if a guy hits and mashes, maybe he sticks. But otherwise, you know, Ian Happ comes back, he's going to get his job back. And then they might have to get sent back down. But it's really, really nice to have that depth. It's going to give the Cubs a lot of options as the season goes. If Garrett Cooper doesn't continue what he's been doing this spring, they can cut him loose. If Patrick Wisdom comes back and is just a strikeout machine like we saw in the middle of last season, then maybe he gets DFA'd or maybe he gets traded. I still, you know, Nick Madrigal is the big question for me. I think I've talked about it a lot, but he doesn't, I think Nick Madrigal is the one that doesn't make sense on this roster anymore. They've got Miles Mastroboni, who is pretty much better than him in almost every area. He's more versatile, a little bit better defender. Oh, I'll give Madrigal, he's a good defender within the range that he has. Miles Mastroboni has a lot more arm than Nick Madrigal, so he can play a deeper third base. He's got more range if they're playing second. He can actually play short. Nick Madrigal can't. He's faster. He's got more pop. He bats left-handed. And at the same time, I really like Nick Madrigal as a player. I was excited when they traded for him. I was picturing a day before the Cubs got Dansby Swanson where Nico Horner would slide and play shortstop and Nick Madrigal could be your everyday second baseman and hit 320 plus. Playing a probably not a gold glove second base, but certainly an adequate second base. But once the Cubs got Swanson, Nick Madrigal has done wonders to make himself into a competent third baseman. But he just, because of that limited arm, he can only play so deep, which limits his range. There are plays we've seen Mastroboni and Morel make deeper at third base, down the line at third base, and Nick Madrigal's just never going to be in position to make that play because he has to play a shallower third base. He's probably too good just to DFA and release, but I think Nick Madrigal's role, and I think there's a place for him in Major League Baseball, is to be a starting second baseman on a team that needs a contact bat in the lineup. And the other thing about his bat is Nick tends to hit better when he's playing every day. He's very much a rhythm, you know, get the timing on the pitchers, you know, slap that ball around kind of hitter. But with Nico Horner at second base, with Christopher Morel playing short, and some of the other bats the Cubs have and the need for power, it just doesn't make sense to play him every day. And so I really hope at some point they find a trade partner, are able to get something out of Nick Madrigal and let him go play. He can be a starting second baseman in this league for several years. So that's my beef on that, which then takes me into number two, you know, Morel at third base. That's probably my biggest question of the season. Can Christopher Morel stick at third base? And again, he doesn't have to be a gold glover, but I think Christopher Morel is a guy who's capable of being a 120, 130 plus WRC plus. He's going to hit. He's going to strike out a lot, but he hits a lot of balls hard. I think, you know, last year he hit 26 home runs with the Cubs. And he hit another, 12? I think he hit 38 total between AAA and the majors. He can, if he can play a full season, stay healthy, stay in the lineup, he's absolutely a 30-plus home run hitter. And that's exactly what the Cubs need in the middle of this order. Never mind that he's just a walking human vibe. I mean, they made a bobblehead this year that they're giving away, I think, on June 1st. Where the jersey's removable because of the way he ripped his shirt off coming around the bases after hitting that walk-off against the White Sox. Like, he's just so much fun to watch. He just plays with such love of the game that if he can play third base, that opens up so many things for this Cubs team. You know, regardless of what happens with Garrett Cooper, Mike Tauchman, or David Peralta, you know, if he were to make the big league team at some point, having that DH spot is gold. You know, it gives you room to bring up Pico Armstrong to play defense in center field, not worry so much about whether he hits because Cody Bellinger or Seiya Suzuki or somebody else can DH. It means if Alexander Canario is crushing baseballs or Owen Casey is just continues to slug 560 in, I'm guessing he'll start double A, but wherever he starts, if he just continues to mash baseballs, he may force his way up this year. And if there's that freedom to rotate a DH, to come in and platoon a DH, that is so big for this team. Because if, you know, as much as I like Miles Mastroboni, I don't think he's an everyday player at this point. He's a really good bench piece. Every team needs that utility guy. And he may even grow into being sort of that super sub, Mark DeRosa, Ben Zobrist kind of utility guy over time. But if Christopher Morel cannot play third base and Matt Shaw's not ready, then you're kind of left with some combo of Nick Madrigal, Miles Mastroboni, Patrick Wisdom at third base, and then you're locking Christopher Morel into the DH spot, which is, it hurts the flexibility. You know, if that DH spot's free, you can put Bellinger at first base and let Bush DH. You know, there are just so many options on the table. That is going to be one of the big questions I watch. I'm optimistic about Morel. Again, I think the big thing with him is he's going to have to out-hit his mistakes in the field. I think he's fully capable of doing that. And so that's what I want to see. So lastly, you know, top five stories this year is how are the Cubs going to do? And so last season I projected 83 wins. So I'll take the W on that because they won 83 games. If anybody questions it, I can give you the link of the episode that I called that in. But so it makes me feel smart that I got the number right, but it didn't happen at all in the way that I thought it would happen. So that's the magic here, right? But I think you look around this division, I think, let's look at the National League and we'll see what happens with LA. I mean, what a bombshell that Shohei Ohtani story was. I'm not going to get into it. Maybe I'll talk about it later. Right now, the story's changed a couple times, but the working story is that Ipe had access to Ohtani's accounts and stole $4.5 million from Ohtani to pay his own gambling debts. It's a tough story, man. I mean, if I want to believe that Shohei Ohtani did not gamble with an illegal bookie, I certainly hope there's no evidence to show he bet on baseball. I love Shohei Ohtani. He's my favorite. He's probably my favorite player in Major League Baseball right now. He's certainly my favorite non-Cub. But Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, like, you can't bet on baseball. That's the one big thing. So hopefully it will show that maybe the story is as it's being presented. It's so weird, man. I mean, why did Ipe have such free access to Shohei's money? Why were they able to wire $4.5 million to a bookie, but really without anybody noticing, and just walked right into a federal investigation of an illegal bookmaker? So we'll see. I'm going to stay away from this story. I just want the facts to come out, and whatever, I hope whatever really happens comes out. If Shohei Ohtani did bet on baseball, he'll get the punishment that comes with that. I mean, it's very clear. It's posted on every clubhouse. I don't care. You know, I can't stand the Pete Rose defense that, you know, he only bet on his own team to win. First of all, no, you can't do that. Two, at the time Pete Rose did it, sports gambling wasn't legal. And three, he didn't bet on his team every single day. So if you're following Pete Rose's betting patterns, do you think he's going to use his bullpen a little bit differently on days he's betting on the team to win? Whatever. I'm already too far into the story. But we'll see how this comes out. But I don't know how that's going to affect the Dodgers. Depending on how this investigation goes, at the moment, Shohei Ohtani is eligible to play. Hopefully it stays that way. It's good for baseball if Shohei Ohtani is playing. If they wind up losing him to any length of suspension, that's a huge question mark. Yoshinobu Yamamoto had a rough spring, the ERA of like 45. I don't expect that to be a big thing. But back to my comments on spring training, like, you know, he's getting used to facing major league hitting. You know, it's a small sample size. Who knows? I expect he's going to be good. He's the leader in the clubhouse or at least to start the season for rookie of the year. We'll see how it goes. But the Dodgers are loaded. I mean, Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman and Will Smith and Max Muncy and just the pitching they have, Tyler Glasnow and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and just on and on and on. You know, they can roll out Clayton Kershaw's their five. I mean, come on. So that team's loaded. San Diego looks really good. The Braves are loaded. I would expect the Dodgers and the Braves on paper to be the two favorites in the National League. So you start looking at what are the Cubs competing for? They're certainly competing in the Central and the wild card, potentially. Hopefully the wild card doesn't come into play. I know a lot of us were talking, hoping that the Cubs would do enough this offseason that they would be the prohibitive favorite in the Central. I don't think they did that much, but I do think they're the favorite in the Central. I know people have questions about the starting rotation, but I'm actually pretty confident in it, especially given the depth of arms they have. So they've got, hopefully they do get Jameson Taillon back mid to late April. I don't know if Justin Steele is going to be in position to be a Cy Young favorite heading into September, but I don't see any reason to expect a major fall off either. I mean, he's continuing to work on potentially adding additional pitches, and his fastball is a true unicorn pitch. It doesn't move like really anybody else's fastball does. That bullet spin fastball into righties is going to continue to play. So I don't see reason for big drop off there. I really like what I see out of Jordan Wicks. It's his rookie year. He's going to have his ups and downs, but that kid's a bulldog. And his changeup is truly one of the elite changeups in baseball. I think we're going to see that this year. Kyle Hendricks, I think, is going to continue to do his thing. Now, this is not 2016, 2017 Kyle Hendricks, but he's a guy who can still post a sub-4 ERA, still go and get you 5 to 7 innings, and he's still going to induce a lot of weak contact ground balls. I'm really excited for Shohei Imanaga. I think his stuff is going to play. Now, again, he's going to have some adjustment period. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see his balance in the spring. He's going to start that home opener. Early forecasts show it's going to be it's going to be a cold, wet day in Chicago in April. Go figure. You know, on the one hand, I don't think he's pitched in those conditions a lot. But on the other hand, he's a fly ball pitcher now. I think some of that's been overblown. He played in a really small park in Japan, so I think there were a lot of balls that were home runs that wouldn't necessarily be home runs other places. But for him to throw early season in Wrigley where the ball doesn't tend to carry when it's cold, that might be a really good place for him to get started. But I think he's going to have a good season. As long as he can stay healthy, he got a lot of good swing and miss this offseason. He led NPB in strikeouts last year. I think he's going to have a season. We'll see if it's as good as Kodai Senga's last year, but I expect it to follow maybe a similar pattern. Kind of some up and down early to settle in. He'll have to work through, you know, in Japan, they typically pitch on a once-a-week schedule, so more like a six-day rotation kind of schedule. The Cubs will have some opportunities for that with off days. You know, like this week, the Cubs will play Thursday, be off on Friday, and then go. So there are going to be some times where there are some extra built-in days of rest. If he's showing fatigue, the Cubs have the ability to, you know, drop in Drew Smyly for a start or, you know, do something to kind of flip him and get him an extra day. Hopefully Jameson Taillon comes back. The Cubs are going to have Hayden Wesneski continue to stretch out in Iowa as a starting pitcher. Now, he had a rough spring. I think a lot of people are done with him as a starting pitcher. I'm not. I still think that's in there. His stuff is nasty. He's got to work out some things again to get lefties out. But if not, he can go back to the bullpen. I think we're going to see Cade Horton. You know, he's starting slow. They didn't even bring him to big league camp this spring training. I think he's going to start slow. I think the game with him is going to be to try to target him to 120, 130 innings, which is probably going to mean slow playing his start. I would expect him to stay kind of in, Cactus League, stay at extended spring training, maybe through a good chunk of April, and maybe start some minor league starts in May. And then by mid-May, he's probably fair game for a call-up as long as he's healthy and his stuff looks good. So he's there if and when the Cubs need him. That might be coming up for 2-3 weeks with a guy on the shelf to go make some starts, and we'll see how it goes, and maybe he goes back down. But the Cubs have a real depth of arms that I think is really promising. So I'm optimistic there. They also, you know, who knows? We'll see. Maybe the Cubs do sign Jordan Montgomery. I don't expect them to, but I think at this point, Jordan Montgomery is still unsigned. I don't expect him to sign until the season starts. If any team signs him before opening day, if it's a one-year deal or a short-term deal with opt-outs, he would have the ability to opt out after the season, and then that team would be able to put a qualifying offer on him, which would hinder his free agency next offseason. If he waits to sign until after opening day, then the team that signs him will not have the ability to give him a qualifying offer. So at this point, he's not going to be ready for opening day anyway, so it's in his best interest really probably to wait until Thursday, Friday, next weekend, or early next week to sign. So I expect he will. I hear the Yankees and Mets are in play. You know, the Cubs can probably continue to look at Jameson Taillon. If he's not progressing, maybe the Cubs do bring him in. But unexpected. But the Cubs are going to have a lot of opportunity this first half of the season up through the trade deadline to, you know, if the starting pitching is a little bit rocky, to go get a guy. You know, there are always starting pitchers available at the deadline, and they'll have the ability to go do that. They've got the prospect capital. They've got the cap room. You know, at this point, depending on where you look, I still think the Cubs are probably just a couple million dollars under the first year of the luxury tax. I have seen some projections with them already over, given some performance incentives and escalators. Now the roster's set. You know, you're paying an extra, you know, league minimum for Garrett Cooper while Patrick Wisdom is on the IL. It's not a big factor, but the Cubs are going to go over the first year of the luxury tax this year. There's no doubt. And they could potentially go over two. So if the Cubs were to sign Jordan Montgomery, you're probably looking at something $26 to $30 million AAV for the first year. So that would put the Cubs squarely over the second tier, but leave them probably $15 million short of the third tier. I don't know if the Cubs will go over the third tier, but I think they'll go over the first, they may go over the second. But you get to midseason, need to make a deal for a starting pitcher, even if that guy's making, you know, $30 million, depending on how you balance the cash, it's midseason. So that $30 million is now $15 million. There's plenty of space. The Cubs have plenty of space to work in, you know, a reliever or two if they need it, starting pitcher. You know, whatever they need at the deadline, they'll be able to go get. So you look at this division, and I see some weird projections for Milwaukee. I still see them some places projected for 91 wins, and I'm just not seeing it. I mean, they traded Corbin Burns away. What's his name is not going to pitch this year. Brandon Woodruff is not going to pitch this year. You still got Freddie Peralta. They still have some good pitching. Now Devin Williams is having problems, health problems in the bullpen. They're going to be starting a lot of young players with a new manager. I don't think they're going to be terrible, but I certainly don't see them winning 90 games. The Cardinals have a lot of injury problems right now. They brought in a lot of older players to try to supplement their roster this year. And, you know, Sonny Gray was their best starting pitcher addition. He's going to start the season on the IL. They'll be good. They'll be a lot better than they were last year. I still don't understand how they were as bad as they were last year. And I think the Cardinals are absolutely going to contend in the Central. But, you know, the betting lines still have the Cubs at 83, 84, 85 wins. Cardinals are kind of in that 83 to 86, depending on where you look and how much they factor the injuries in. The Reds are a team to watch for sure. They have a lot of young talent coming in, but now they've lost TJ Friedel for a good length of time. They have a bunch of other guys who were hurt. So I don't know what to expect out of them. The Pirates are going to be a high variance team. Like they have, if O'Neill Cruz can stay healthy and those, you know, they've got some young, interesting players. We'll probably see Paul Skeens at some point this year. You know, is he going to come up and be a dominant young pitcher? He'll have that chance. When I look at the Cubs, though, I think the Cubs easily have the highest floor in this division. I think this is a team where if things don't go well, I still see them being north of 500. I mean, I think the floor on this team, barring complete catastrophes and injuries, I mean, I'm thinking like 1985 level where the Cubs were mid-June up six games in the division after winning the division in 84. And all of a sudden, within 3 weeks, the entire starting rotation was on the, at the time, the disabled list. You know, barring catastrophic injuries, I think the floor of this team is about 82, 83 wins. I see this team as probably a 89 win team. That's going to be my prediction, 89 wins with upside. You know, if the Cubs stay healthy and the division is weaker, you know, if St. Louis isn't quite as good as people are guessing, if Milwaukee really does fall off, if Cincinnati can't stay healthy, there are going to be more wins on the table and the Cubs could get up over 90. The Cubs, I also expect to be active at the deadline. So if they really go make whether it's even a big trade or not in terms of the capital they give up or the money spent, if they go fill the holes they have at the deadline, that could really solidify them and that 89 wins could turn into 93, 94. I don't expect the Cubs to be on the Dodgers and Braves level, but I do expect them to be kind of 89 wins into the lower 90s with potential if things break right. I think the Cubs are the favorite. I would expect them to win the division. If the Cubs don't win the division, I still think they're going to get to that 89 win ballpark, and that should be good enough to get them into the wild card. You typically look, especially now that they've added the third wild card, I went back and looked last year, and you can't exactly use these numbers because in some years, the two wild card spots were long since spoken for, so nobody was really pushing at the end to get that third spot. But pretty typically, if you can win 86 games, you're going to have a really, really good shot at that third wild card. So the Cubs at 89 should be a playoff team. And that's what I expected. That's the expectation this year. Now, is it going to happen at all the way I think it's going to happen? Probably not. I could see a scenario where the Cubs get out to a quick start, the other teams have injury problems, and the Cubs maybe do run away with this division and do more. I could also see if Michael Busch struggles, if Christopher Morel can't hold down third base, if the Cubs have lingering injury problems, if the starting rotation struggles, you know, the Cubs could be more on that lower end side and be more 82, 83, really fighting it out to the end like last year for a playoff spot. But I'm going to predict the Cubs at 89 wins. I think the Cubs are going to make the playoffs, and I think we're going to have postseason baseball in Chicago to be excited about. Let's see how this goes. Enjoy Thursday. Thank you for joining me today. If you like this episode, please drop a rating and review wherever it is you get your podcasts and share an episode with a friend. Just a few seconds from you gives me great feedback and helps other Cub fans find the show. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at Cubs PS Plus. and check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/CubsPSPlus, to help support the show. As always, the theme music for this podcast is Prospect Park West by Jerry McCoy. This is Mike Waller, host of the Cubs PS Plus podcast. Every day with Cubs baseball or talking about Cubs baseball is a great day. Go Cubs!